Well, hello everyone. How are you guys doing this morning? Good. Fantastic. My name is Roger. I'm one of the pastors here at Reality Church. How many of you guys either volunteered or participated in Slide the City yesterday? Holler, because I can't really see you, because I wear these glasses so I can read my notes and y'all look fuzzy. You know, it's like, no, I'm not going to tell that story right now. Anyway, thank you guys so much. And by the way, if you were there from about 9:30 to 2:30 as a volunteer, almost 80% of the volunteers were from Reality Church. So thank you guys for plugging into our community. I appreciate that. That's awesome. This summer, we've been doing a series called The Intentionals. And the overall point of the series is that God can use your scars, your weaknesses, your problems, your junk, your wounds, your limitations. He can use all of that for His glory. And in fact, it seems like a lot of times He's very intentional about using our weaknesses or the things that we would consider excuse not to do something to bring Him glory. And so today I'm going to talk about Joshua. Now, when you think of Joshua, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? Holler it out. Yeah, Jericho, the Battle of Jericho. And in fact, if you've been going to church as long as I have, you probably have a song in your head right now about the walls coming tumbling down. And at some point in your past, you've had boxes in your Sunday school classroom that you knocked over, and it was the best day ever because you got to knock over boxes in Sunday school. And so that's what I think of, too. That's the first thing I think of, the Battle of Jericho. I also think about, warrior, tough guy, Moses second in command, fearless, courageous. And in addition to all of those attributes, he was also the conqueror of the promised land. And in fact, probably considered one of the greatest military leaders in the Bible because of that conquest, which took 7 years. And so Joshua was a very courageous guy, a strong guy who was a warrior. And as I'm thinking about the sermon, I'm trying to think of what scars Joshua might have, and I'm thinking, man, I've read this story quite a few times, and does he really even have any weaknesses? I mean, he seems like maybe the exception to the rule of God using our scars to bring Him glory. He seems really like the perfect guy. He seems like someone I'd want to model my life after. He seems courageous. I mean, don't you guys want to be like Joshua? Don't you want to be courageous and fearless? And now I realize I'm not as strong or courageous as Joshua. I've never conquered a nation. I've never conquered a city. And in fact, I've actually never even really been in a fight. So I kind of fail on all levels as far as that comparison. But I don't think I'm a scaredy cat. I mean, there's not a lot of things that I think I'm scared of. Now, what I would like you guys to do is, on the count of three, everybody yell what you're scared of, okay? You ready? 1, 2, 3.
Spiders!
Okay, so I heard one thing and then a whole bunch of blah! But somebody is really scared of spiders. They made that.
Don't bite me up.
I wasn't going to, Manny, but then you, spoke twice. So I don't know exactly what you mentioned, but probably you mentioned some of these, because these are the top five fears of Americans. Number one is public speaking, fear of animals, bugs, snakes, spiders, that kind of stuff. A top five fear is heights, drowning, and blood and needles. Those are the top five fears of Americans. Now, obviously, the reason why I think I'm a little courageous is because, not many of these are really on my list. I'm obviously not scared of public speaking because that's what I'm doing right now. I love heights. In fact, my dream job would be to be a window washer on a skyscraper. I just think that would be so awesome. Unfortunately, not a lot of demand for that here in Papillion La Vista. Maybe a third-story window is about as high as I could get here. And then as far as drowning, I'm not really scared of that. I learned to swim at a young age. And then the blood and needles thing, I donate blood several times a year. And in fact, if you want to join me in helping save lives at the Big Live, September 25th through the 27th, we're going to be having a blood donation bank right here at Reality Church. So mark that on your calendars. And then really the only thing in the top five that gives me any pause is the bugs, snakes, and other animals. And of those, it's really only snakes and dogs. And I know you're looking at those puppies and you're like, oh, they're so cute. But cute dogs bite too, just so you know. I've been bitten by cute dogs, small cute dogs, and it hurts. And so I'm scared of dogs. In fact, if I'm jogging and there's on the trail and there's a dog of any size next to me, I will run down the ditch and risk personal injury. I would probably run in front of traffic to avoid a dog. Dogs scare me. And so, anyway, enough about what I'm scared of. Another thing in the top 10, by the way, is darkness. And I'm not really scared of the dark anymore. I turn all the lights off when I go to bed, and so we've worked our way past that. But when I was younger, I was scared of the dark. I grew up on a farm in north central North Dakota, and when it was time for the sows to farrow, now if you don't know what that means, that's basically farmer talk for when the mama pigs were about to have baby pigs, okay? We had to go to the barn, which was very scary, to check them, and it was very dark. Farms aren't like cities where they're lit up the whole time, you know, where you can, no matter where you go, it's light. It's very dark, especially behind the barn. And so when I would have to go check them, I would pretend like I was in this glass enclosure that was impenetrable. And if any of you have watched Mission Impossible, which seems like everyone in the nation apparently has watched this weekend, there's a glass box at the end. Picture that. That's what I pictured myself in. And I would go to the barn. I'd be praying the whole time. I've got this box surrounding me as I'm running. And I'm confident that I could have defeated Usain Bolt in a race after I came back from the barn from checking the pigs. That's how scared of the dark I was. There's not a lot of things that I feel like I'm scared of now. And if you hung out with me, you probably wouldn't think I was really scared of anything. But that's mostly probably because I do a good job of keeping them hidden. I keep what I'm scared of inside. And as Lance showed us very clearly last week, this is often the case. What we see on the outside isn't always the truth of what's happening on the inside. On the outside, Joshua appeared to be fearless. And I can't find anywhere in Scripture where Joshua showed any outward appearance of fear. But if he was fearless, if he was courageous, if he was so strong, why does God, Moses, and even the children of Israel continue to tell Joshua, be strong and courageous? Be strong and courageous. Well, we're going to look at the life of Joshua today, and maybe we can figure that out from the story. And I'm going to be in the Old Testament. We're going to be in Exodus and Numbers and Joshua, and some of the verses will be on this screen. But I would encourage you, if you have your Bible with, to take it out. If you got your phone with, take it out and look the verses up. Look the verses up there. Follow along with me. We're going to be skipping around quite a bit. I'll read them all, but follow along if you can. I think that'll be helpful. And so we're going to start in Exodus 17, verse 9. It says, Moses commanded Joshua, choose some men to go out and fight the army of Amalek for us. Tomorrow I will stand at the top of the hill holding the staff of God in my hand. So Joshua did what Moses had commanded and fought the army at Amalek. As a result, Joshua overwhelmed the army of Amalek in battle. So Joshua, at this point, is a commander of the army, and as a good commander, he did what Moses had commanded. There doesn't seem to be any hesitation. He did exactly what he was asked, and apparently without fear, because there's nothing that indicates that he was afraid to carry out this command. He just did it. He did what Moses had commanded. So Moses clearly had a lot of confidence in Joshua. And in Exodus 24:13, when Moses was called up to Mount Sinai a second time to meet with God, he took Joshua with him. And in Exodus 33:11, it seems to indicate that God met face to face with Joshua in the same way he did with Moses. Or at the very least, Joshua was in the room while God was meeting with Moses. So Joshua was not on the outside looking in. He was there. He was in the room. He was Moses' second in command, his most trusted associate. And again, it sure doesn't seem like Joshua has any fear on the outside. Again, on the outside, it sure seems like Joshua had it all together. He's the number two man in all of Israel, personal meetings with God, commander of the army. I mean, what more could he want, right? Well, how about espionage? International intrigue. Have you ever thought I would love to be a spy? Because I have thought I would love to be a spy. At least the way being a spy works in the movies, because in the movies, the spies always have the coolest gadgets. They're always so cool under pressure, you know. The bomb always gets stopped with like 0.008 seconds left, because I know that in real life, it does it exactly like in the movies, right? And so who wouldn't want to be a spy? I mean, it always turns out well for the spy in the movies, right? The spy always is the hero in the end. And so in addition to everything else Joshua did, he got to be a spy. And this story is found in Numbers 13. And so I'm going to read parts of this story to you. If you want to follow along, we're going to start in Numbers 13:1. So 13:1, the Lord said to Moses, "Send some men to explore the land of Canaan." And then verse 3, "So at the Lord's command, Moses sent them out, and one of them was Joshua." So sending out actually 12 spies, one of them is Joshua. And then we're going to skip down to verse 17. So Numbers 13, verse 17. "When Moses sent them to explore Canaan, he said, 'See what the land is like and whether the people who live there are strong or weak, few or many. What kind of land do they live in? Is it good or bad? What kind of towns do they live in? Are they unwalled or fortified? How is the soil? Is it fertile or poor? Are there trees in it or not? Do your best to bring back some of the fruit of the land.'" Verse 21, "So they went up and explored the land. When they reached the valley of Eshcol, they cut off a branch bearing a single cluster of grapes. Two of them carried it on a pole between them, also some pomegranates and figs." I have to stop there for just a minute because I love grapes. Grapes are the greatest fruit. And the thought of a cluster of grapes so big that it takes two men to carry and that would barely fit in your fridge is just mind-blowing. Grapes are my favorite fruit 51 weeks out of the year. Now, in case you're wondering about the 52nd week, well, my favorite fruit that week is pineapple, because we're in Jamaica on the mission experience, and their pineapple is so much better than any pineapple ever in Nebraska. It's fresher. And I just, like, in a plug for our Jamaica missions experience, you should come eat pineapple with me July 2nd through the 9th next year on our Jamaica mission experience, okay? Just mark those dates in your calendar and come join us and eat the best pineapple you'll ever eat. Plus, we're actually going to do a lot of other cool things and make an impact. And so think about that starting now. In fact, if you start saving money now, if you put maybe $30 a week or less away, you'll be all paid up by the time we're ready to go. So that is my plug for the mission experience next summer. Back to our story. Verse 26. "They came back to Moses and Aaron and the whole Israelite community, and they reported to them and to the whole assembly and showed them the fruit of the land. They gave Moses this account: 'We went into the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey. Here is its fruit. But the people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. We even saw descendants of Anak there.'" Now, the Anaks were a race of giants. They were huge and scary, and the people of Israel, it said, felt like grasshoppers in their sight. So you can imagine how big these people must have felt if the Israelites were like, "We're grasshoppers, you know? Like, we're done. All they need to do is step on us and squish us. They're so big." And I think, obviously, if you feel like a grasshopper, the guy's big. So I don't know how big these giants were, but they were large. In verse 30, "Then Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, 'We should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it.' But the men who had gone up with him said, 'We can't attack those people. They are stronger than us.' and they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land they had explored. So this verse says, then Caleb silenced the people, but Joshua was also a part of the two spies that had a good report. There was 10 spies that gave a bad report, and then two spies that gave a good report. That was Caleb and Joshua. And so really, Caleb and Joshua are saying, you know, let's do this. God is with us. They can't stop us. We're unstoppable. The rest of the spies, however, were a bunch of chickens. You know, but again, this is another example of Joshua being fearless, of Joshua not being afraid to do the right thing. We're going to pick up our story in Numbers 14, verse 5. Then Moses and Aaron fell face down on the ground before the whole community of Israel. Two of the men who had explored the land, Joshua and Caleb, tore their clothing. They said to all the people of Israel, "We have traveled through and explored this wonderful land, and the Lord is pleased with us. He will bring us safely into that land and give it to us. It is a rich land flowing with milk and honey. Do not rebel against the Lord, and don't be afraid of the people of the land. They are only helpless prey to us. They have no protection, but the Lord is with us. Don't be afraid." See, I think Moses and Aaron and Caleb and Joshua, I think they had a pretty good idea what was coming next. And I think they knew that God was going to be pretty angry that these other spies had not trusted him, had not trusted God for their protection. In verse 10, it says, "But the whole community began to talk about stoning Joshua and Caleb." Again, Joshua's life in danger. He doesn't appear to be afraid. He appears to be courageous in spite of the fact that he was threatened with being stoned. Continue in verse 10, "Then the glorious presence of the Lord appeared to all the Israelites at the tabernacle. And the Lord said to Moses, 'How long will these people treat me with contempt? Will they ever believe me, even after all the miraculous signs that I have done among them? I will disown them and destroy them with a plague. Then I will make a nation greater and mightier than they are.'" As you can imagine, God is not happy with the people of Israel. And in fact, Moses is forced to intercede so that God doesn't destroy the whole nation of Israel just right on the spot. And so Moses is interceding. They don't get destroyed on the spot, but they also don't get by without some punishment. And in verse 14, or Numbers 14, 20, it talks exactly about what that punishment is. "The Lord said to them, 'I will pardon them as you have requested, but as surely as I live, as surely as the earth is filled with the Lord's glory, not one of these people will ever enter the promised land.'" And so at this point, the people of Israel are sent to wander in a desert for 40 years. And while death was not immediate for the people that didn't trust God, basically, if you were 20 years and older at the time of this, you died in the desert in the next 40 years and you did not get to see the promised land. And so while the punishment was not immediate, it did happen, and none of those people got to see the promised land. Now, the 10 spies that were scared, they were actually struck dead immediately. So, which made me think, have you ever been afraid and questioned God's ability to protect you? Have you ever questioned his ability to protect you? Well, let me just say it's a good thing you weren't an Old Testament spy, because you wouldn't be here this morning, because they got one chance and they blew it. So fast forward 40 years. The people are back at the edge of the promised land, ready to claim it. And Joshua is about to lead the nation of Israel into the promised land. You know, this is the spot they had been 40 years ago when the spies brought back the bad report and scared the people of Israel from entering in the promised land. So after 40 years of wandering, they're finally back at this point where they're going to get to go into the promised land. And Moses, because of a sin he had committed, is not going to be allowed to lead the people into the promised land. He'd been leading them ever since they came out of Egypt, but now it was time for him to turn it over to Joshua. And this is the point where Joshua gets told repeatedly to be strong and courageous. And it starts in Deuteronomy 31, verse 7. Then Moses called for Joshua, and as all of Israel watched, Moses said to him, "Be strong and courageous, for you, Joshua, will lead these people into the land that the Lord swore to their ancestors he would give them." And so Moses is telling Joshua, be strong and courageous. And then if we go to Joshua 1, verse 6, this is where, you know, Moses was telling Joshua. Now God himself is directly telling Joshua, and he is saying, be strong and courageous, for you are the one who will lead these people to possess all the land I swore to their ancestors I would give them. Be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the instructions Moses gave you. This is my command. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or discouraged, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Does it seem weird to anyone else that Joshua is repeatedly told to be strong and courageous? I mean, what has he ever done to indicate that he wasn't strong and courageous? What am I missing? What are we missing in this story? According to Carl von Clausewitz, courage above all things is the first quality of a warrior. And I got to admit that before the end of last service, I had no idea who this Carl dude was. I was hoping that he wasn't, you know, some weird guy, but I loved the quote. Well, then I found out this guy actually wrote a book about war back in the 1800s that still is referred to today when the military is planning missions. And so he's an authority on this. And what he's saying is courage above all things is the first quality of a warrior. And Joshua, above all else, was a warrior. I mean, he was a great warrior. He was a successful warrior, one of the best warriors ever. He was an all-time great. He was a first ballot Hall of Fame warrior, if there was a Hall of Fame for warriors. He was in it. So Moses tells Joshua, be strong and courageous. God repeatedly tells him to be strong and courageous. And then if you continue to read the story in verse 18, the people of Israel, you know, the ones that were scared to go enter 40 years ago, are telling Joshua, you know what? You guessed it. Be strong and courageous, Joshua. Everyone keeps telling Joshua, be strong and courageous. Why? I mean, Joshua had long since shown his courage in the war with Amalek, in the descent from the report of the evil spies, in this confrontation of the people for worshiping idols. And we didn't even get to that story. That's in Exodus 32 if you want to look it up. And yet Moses, the Israelites, and God all see fit to continue to pound this upon him. Be strong and courageous. Why was that? What are we missing? Because clearly Joshua did have a scar he was dealing with. Clearly Joshua did have a shortcoming or a wound or something that he was dealing with. And that's why God and Moses and the people of Israel had to continually remind Joshua to be strong and courageous. Now, I can't say that I know 100% what his scar was, but I do think that I have an idea. And I think Joshua's scar was a lack of self-confidence. And because of his lack of self-confidence, remember, he was number two to Moses, and Moses was one of the greatest leaders ever. And so it would be easy to see why he might have a lack of confidence working in the shadow of such a great person, and now he's going to be in charge. He's going to try and fill his shoes. And so I think because of his lack of self-confidence, I think it made him act in a very passive way in situations other than the battlefield. In situations where he wasn't in his warrior gear and he wasn't a warrior, I think he may have been passive. And God knew the dangers of passivity. God knows that passive men are a danger to their family and whoever they're leading, And Joshua needed to be assertive at this time, not passive. He was about to be the leader of a nation. This was no time for Joshua to be passive. And I want, please note that I said assertive and not aggressive. Assertive means having a confident personality and is synonymous with self-confident, decisive, assured. Aggressive means likely to attack or confront and is synonymous with hostile and belligerent. Assertive makes good eye contact. Aggressive glares or stares. Assertive uses a casual tone and speaks openly. Aggressive speaks loudly and interrupts or talks over others. So please see, you know, we sometimes think the opposite of aggressive is passive, and it may be, but neither are the goal. Neither passive nor aggressive is the goal. The goal is in the middle, and it's assertive. And I think assertive is the godly way to interact with each other. Neither passive nor aggressive. Neither of those are okay. And so, to kind of bring this home, guys, I got some stuff specifically for you, and ladies, I have some stuff specifically for you, and we're going to start with the men, but ladies, don't start elbowing the guy next to you because your turn is also coming, all right? Men, are you a warrior at work and a wimp at home? Does your lack of self-confidence lead to a level of passivity that is hurting your relationships, your children, your marriage, your spiritual life, your family's spiritual life? Are you less afraid of being in a fist fight than leading a family devotional? Would you rather go to war than pray out loud in front of your family? Would you rather spend 80 hours a week working than to make sure your wife is being nurtured spiritually? Are you willing to fight for your marriage with the same passion you fight for a promotion? Well, since Adam, our tendency as men is to be passive. Adam's passivity led to Eve's sin. Men, is your passivity when it comes to spiritual things leading your wife and your children to sin? If so, it's time to step it up. It's time to reject passivity and become assertive. A quick aside, three signs that you may be passive. This really applies to not just the men, but everyone. If your main forms of communication are sarcasm, silence, and avoidance, you might just be a passive person. Ladies, your turn. One of the reasons men are passive is because of your aggressiveness. Something that has been a temptation for you since the first sin way back in Genesis 3. You need to fight the urge to control your husband. Because that urge is not from God. And I know that you think nagging is a great way to control your man. You do, however, realize that nagging is not the work of the Holy Spirit, and it will not convict your men to be less passive. To me, nagging a husband is a lot like spanking a child. You may get a temporary outward change in behavior, but neither will ever change their heart or their attitude. And in fact, it will most likely have the opposite effect. Ladies, you need to back off and create a gap that can be filled by your husband. Encourage him to be assertive. He needs your encouragement. Now, it's a lot to lay out there without giving you some practical ways to be assertive. And so, again, I'm going to start with the guys. Practically speaking, men, what is something you can do this week to be more assertive and less passive? And honestly, according to women, it really doesn't take that much. I'm going to give you a few ideas right now. Here's some examples of assertive behavior that women would like to see from guys. Plan a date. Do a project around the house without being nagged. Initiate activities with the kids. Sit up and lean forward and look enthusiastic when you're having a conversation with them. Stand up for yourself in front of your coworkers and family when they take advantage of you. Be the spiritual leader of your family. Men, I know that it takes courage for you to be assertive. Take courage. So practically speaking, ladies, what is something you can do this week to be less controlling? Well, take some of the pressure off him by pulling back a bit. Avoid the worn-out accusations and complaints. We are all aware of our shortcomings. Show some appreciation for what he does right. Be fun to be with. And when he finally picks that restaurant for dinner, don't list 20 reasons why that was the wrong restaurant, okay? I know you've all done that. Ladies, I know that it takes courage to be less controlling. Take courage. C.S. Lewis says this about courage. He says, courage is not simply one of the virtues, but the form of every virtue at the testing point. We all need courage. No matter what our temptation, we all need courage to overcome it. We need courage to be less passive. We need courage to be less aggressive. We need courage to be less controlling. We need courage to be assertive. The good news is God will give you that courage if you will ask Him. God's desire for us is not to give in to temptation. So if we ask Him for that courage, He will give it. And in fact, let's ask Him together right now to give us more courage.